We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dame Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts, coming at you on a Sunday night. Britt Robson of The Athletic is my guest on tonight's show. We are going to take a look at the second round of the NBA playoffs with the Clippers knocking off the Mavs Sunday afternoon. We're down to the final eight teams, and Britt and I will spend about 20 minutes on each of those four series: Bucks Nets, Nuggets Suns, Clippers Jazz, and Sixers Hawks. But before I bring Britt in here, I wanted to tell you that we are going to be doing a live event on the night of the NBA lottery at Forgotten Star Brewery. The lottery is on Tuesday, June 22nd, so it's coming up. And Forgotten Star is going to set up a whole projection screen and all of their TVs on the lottery that night. So it's going to be a Wolves night at Forgotten Star. It's just an opportunity to get together and then an opportunity to listen to Britt and I do a show live after the results come in. You know, I figured if the Wolves are going to lose their pick to the Warriors, that it would be, it might be fun to do it together. And if they get the pick, you know, it'll be a pretty fun night as well. So come hang out. It's a really cool brewery. It's big. I went there on Thursday and met with the Forgotten Star staff. So again, Tuesday, June 22nd, the lottery itself is at 7:30. That's when the ping pong balls will start going off. But come through it at 6 and we'll be all set up to chat over some beers. Forgotten Star is technically located in Fridley, but that sounds worse than it is. It's only a 10-minute drive from downtown Minneapolis. Again, I made it that drive on Thursday, so it's within range. They'll have a full array of their beers, but they have one beer called the Buzzer Beater Honey IPA, where the proceeds from the beer go to support the Fridley basketball team. I tried it on Thursday. It's delicious. They're also going to give one of you a free team entry to their bocce ball tournament on the weekend of June 25th. They have a huge bocce ball set up, so an added little perk in there. Just if you're looking to give a summer brewery a shot, check out Forgotten Star before the live show on the 22nd. It's a dope brewery. But definitely come through on June 22nd for our draft lottery live event. Come meet Britt and I, have a beer, bring a good luck charm, whatever. We'll watch the Wolves get the number one pick. It's gonna be a blast. Again, that's Forgotten Star Brewery. They're open at noon, 7 days a week. Check them out. Speaking of Britt, let's get to the pod. All right, Britt Robson of The Athletic. We are recording on Sunday night. Like I said, Britt, we just finished a day of games. We are in the second round. I'll leave it up to you to just start. Which one of these series is most piquing your interest? Which one do you want to dig into first?
Well, I think the one that maybe the most consequential is Nets and Bucks. I mean, the more you look at it, the more you think that the winner of that series probably is the favorite to win it all right now.
Right. And what we saw in that game was something that signals that it's not going to be as close as we might have anticipated. I mean, it's been being billed as the championship, and with only
you think
two
the Nets
the
are going to run away with it.
That's where I'm leaning, yeah.
See, I'm not altogether positive that's true. I think the Nets will win it. But I also think that Giannis's shot selection can be improved, and that'll make a huge difference. they're going to make more threes than they made last time. And I do think, I mean, this is a weird hot take. It's not necessarily, I won't say that they're, the Nets are better with Harden out, but they're not minus nearly as much as people might imagine. The only place I really see it hurting them is when he would normally come in with the second unit. And they can always leave one of the other two guys out there. But it does get rid of the problem that I've always talked about as one of my reasons for not favoring the Nets, which is three alphas on the floor at crunch time. I think it's much easier to deal with two alphas on the floor at crunch time.
So I think I'm kind of with you, but only specifically to this series. I think when you think about what Milwaukee can do best defensively, it's take away the rim. And if we're talking about the big three guys in Brooklyn, the one of those three players most likely to try and profit at the rim is James Harden. And so what I think we saw in game one was it just be KD and Kyrie. And as we know, what Milwaukee is willing to sacrifice is that mid-range area where James never uses that. You know, he wouldn't be stopping and pulling from 16 the way that KD and Kyrie are. And so I just think that the way Milwaukee defends is not going to hinder those two guys out there. Where it might have hindered Harden a little bit, you could see him getting frustrated, ramming into Brooke Lopez at the rim a bunch, not getting calls, that sort of deal. But I'd be concerned if I'm a Bucks fan, because what happened in that game was you played well enough to keep Brooke Lopez on the floor, you know. You didn't get screwed by needing to take him off, yet it still wasn't all that close, right? It wasn't like they totally spaced Brooke out and killed him.
Right.
And I think he's so important to what they do, yet at the same time, it wasn't that close. And it kind of goes back to what I've always talked about with this Brooklyn team. They're just way better than everyone else. They have so much more talent.
And I would disagree to the extent that I think the difference between shooting, let's say, 4 points below their average for the season, let's say they make 35% of their threes instead of 20% of their threes, you know, that's 12 points.
How do you feel about that as just like a general rule? Because, you know, we're watching Clippers Mavs today and it's the same thing, right? Like the Clippers make 10 more threes or whatever they did. And I know we can do that.
I don't think it's a general rule. I think in this particular case,
okay,
Miami had its perimeter game off and its inside game was shown to be as, first of all, I think Blake Griffin played out of his mind and was like the closet MVP of the game in many respects. I thought he played really well.
Out of his mind in the sense that he can't duplicate it, or out of his mind in he just played really hard.
Out of his mind in that he's a mid-30s guy that is obviously past his prime, who has figured out how to be incredibly valuable in a way that Brooklyn really needs. And that will continue to happen. Well, I don't know. I mean, that's really hard way to play for a long time. I mean, what I was really impressed with both Griffin and Durant was that they didn't let the refs get in their head once. And Durant in particular, Durant got whistled for a lot of fouls that were committed on him where he just shrugged it off. He was always running back up the court. He could have had two or three and ones that he didn't get. And you know, that often happens in the playoffs. People get ultra intense. He was about his business. Griffin, I mean, Bobby Portis pretty much committed assault and battery on that jump ball. I mean, he gave him a couple of forearm shivers and then put his, you know, forearm into Griffin's neck, which are the things I used to see Blake Griffin do to other people. So, I didn't have a tremendous amount of sympathy for it. But in this particular case, I just thought Portis and Griffin, my prediction is at minimum, double text for both of them a couple of times before the series is over, and perhaps some mild fisticuffs or just some face-to-face jawing, because those are two hotheads that like to play contact. So
I
I've said this since the Blake thing went down, that the trade went down at the time, or do we even call that a trade? The buyout and the signing is like, Blake Griffin is 2 years removed from an all-NBA level player. And
still a shadow of himself.
And still a shadow of himself. But I think from the beginning, everybody was pointing what he was doing in Detroit, which was terrible. The effort wasn't there. But what I always push back on the idea of Blake in Brooklyn was is that the effort could respond.
Right. He bars D out it.
Sure. And I just think, again, 2 years removed from being at that time what he would have been, maybe 29. I think he's 31, 32 now. He was an extremely impactful player and skilled player, not just an athlete. Like I think part of the Blake Griffin problem, and I know this isn't you because you've been watching him, but a lot of people's image of Blake Griffin in their head is him jumping over a car or getting a lob from Chris Paul 10 years ago.
Right.
That Blake Griffin added a ton of skill to his game.
Right.
And to that end, like, I don't have his stats right up here from the Heat. Maybe he made like two or three threes in that
passing
game.
Passing and outside shooting were the two things he really added for the Clippers. And I think his defense.
No, for the Pistons, which he added when he got to Detroit.
Oh, for the Pistons.
Right.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
No, but I actually think that he added it while he was with the Clippers. He kept adding to his game, you know. And so for Detroit, I think a lot of his stats in Detroit were just what he'd been doing all along. It's just that he was the only guy on that team sometimes. I mean, I'm not sure he took a step forward. I think he matured well.
No. The 2018-19 season, Blake Griffin was like pick and roll, coming off of screens, shooting threes. Mm-hmm. That 2018-19, his last good year in Brooklyn. Like that, it was like a point forward. My point is, whatever, we don't need to relitigate Detroit. My point is I wasn't shocked to see him knock down a couple threes.
Oh, no,
I wasn't shocked.
I think he was shooting those threes at the end of his Clipper days. I wouldn't want to give him.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying, I think we kind of agree on the fact that he was a better all-around player in Detroit than he was like his third year in L.A., where all he had to do was be part of a triangle with Paul and D'Angelo Jordan, DeAndre Jordan. But
there you go. You got it.
See, I'm getting better. Must be the new mic. I do think that he has had that long range shot for a while. What has impressed me more than anything is that he is the defense, interior defense, when he's on the floor now. I mean, you know,
and yeah, he was never that at any stop.
Exactly. And KD plays good defense, but KD doesn't like to get in the paint for defense. He likes to be a swooper and a perimeter guy. And so,
which is what's really weird about this series is now he's guarding Brook Lopez, you know,
who weirdly likes to be a swooper, except that he realizes now that, you know,
can't swoop.
Right. But I mean, look at that Miami. Look at that Milwaukee roster, though. It's full of bruising guys. I mean, there's like five guys: Portis, Giannis, Brook Lopez. There's at least one or two other guys that are, you know, are guys who go after you.
Yeah, I mean, Drew Hall down to the guards too. Hall, right. They obviously plays really physical. Connaughton, I would say that too. Like, they're a physical team. And down to Jeff Teague.
Jeff Teague tries to be. He got an honorary tech. I know. Yeah.
I love that side eye Jeff Teague like face where he's talking shit to somebody, but from the side of his face. Right. Yeah,
you can totally understand why Jeff Teague and Dennis Schroeder hated each other while they were on the same team, can't you? Totally. Both assholes in their own way when they're on the court. Totally. You know.
All right, Jeff's my guy. I love Jeff. But
so anyway, Blake Griffin, if he plays that way every game, then it probably will be over in five or six. If he doesn't, Milwaukee's got a shot at extending this thing and making it interesting.
Because why?
Because Giannis is incredible. We always forget that.
Yeah. But I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying.
Right. I mean, so Giannis can go for 40 and 18 and also get a ton of people in foul trouble. If he doesn't shoot those above the break threes or hit mid-ranges, I mean, those are such blessings. I mean,
totally.
The stupidest play-by-play analyst can say Giannis is, they're baiting Giannis into shots. You know, I mean, it's so obvious. Anybody can see it, which makes me wonder why, you know, Budenholzer, you know, even allows it.
I mean, there's, to some extent, it's going to happen. Like, he's going to be up there with the ball at the top of the key with, like, 8 seconds on the shot clock. And if they wall up, he got to take, like, it's not that he needs to take zero of them. He needs to not be okay with taking them in situations that do not demand him taking those shots. Like, if he's going to be a high usage guy, late shot clock, he's got to take shots. So I get that. And he'll make some of them. Like, he's not going to shoot that poorly on jump shots every single game. I think what was more from the Brooklyn side of it, or what would be concerning if I'm a Bucks fan, is the Nets did a way better job of walling up than I thought they would be able to. I thought Bruce Brown acquitted himself, all 6'3" of them. I thought Claxton was active.
Right. And on Bruce Brown is another benefit of the Harden injury. I mean,
he started the second half. Yeah.
Yeah. And got the minutes when Harden went out, he went in. And I agree with you that Claxton's been a grinder from the beginning. I think it was smart that Jordan didn't play.
Surprised.
Well, I mean, at the same time, I think coaches coach to try things out, because it would have been more problematical for the Nets if Jordan had played well, because that means you would have had to stick with him a little bit. And I think that because he's Durant's friend, that's why he's on the team in many respects. You don't want Jordan come in and playing well, because then your hands are tied when you want to do what you want to do as a coach. So I think that's part of it. But I do think you can't sell Milwaukee short because they're deep. I mean,
yeah.
DiVincenzo's injury, I think, hurts them because
everybody's got an injury, though.
I know.
Everybody's got an injury of that.
You're right.
That.
You're right.
Jeff Green, too. If Jeff Green gets back in this series,
right,
that's another added benefit for Brooklyn. I go back to what I said at the beginning, where it was like my major concern for Milwaukee was that it would become apparent, like in the first half, that Brook Lopez can't play in this series.
Right.
Because if that happened, then I'm like, they're screwed, because he is the identity of their defense. Giannis, they have Giannis, but the identity of their defense is that way. And if they had to play him off the floor, and we would all be like, oh, cute, they're switching PJ Tucker, you know, everyone's switching. And it's not like that's a bad strategy against the Nets. It's just.
But yeah, you can't have PJ Tucker switching. He's not fast enough. But if you tell PJ Tucker to go guard Kevin Durant, then you've got something going there.
And I think that's just important to him. I mean, everybody talked all season about, oh, the Bucks need to switch more. And they tried it. And they're situationally, they do need to do those things. Bud needs to not be dogmatic, like, to the nth degree. But what the Bucks do best defensively is what the Bucks do best defensively, which is filter everything into Brook at the rim and shut shit down there, you know? Right. And so if Brook was able to stay in the game, I think that's encouraging. I don't think he's going to get played off in this series. So I think there's going to be some games where if KD and Kyrie aren't hitting their pull-ups, you know, they're just not making shots. Like, I wouldn't be that surprised if the Bucks win one of these games by like 25-30, where they just roll, they're hitting their threes. Like, it's funny. I say that, but at the same time, I don't think like this series, I think it'll probably be like Nets and six or something like that. I'm partially encouraged by the Bucks not totally breaking in the first game, but to some extent, it's just kind of as simple as like they didn't even need Harden, and they don't. I don't think they do. They got enough.
The 2 points I want to make is that Harden is not that important to this particular roster.
That's fair.
And secondly,
in this series.
Yeah, in this series. And secondly, I will be a lot more on your side in terms of almost an arrogant assumption that the Nets will win this thing if the Bucks hit their threes and still get wiped by double digits. If that happens, then I'll say, all right, you're right. But once you got to understand,
are you playing devil's advocate right now? Or
no, I'm actually.
Are you,
more,
so you think the Bucks are going to win the series?
No, I don't. I would, but I was more impressed with the Bucks than I thought I was going to be, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that, I mean, it was easy to see that the Bucks were going to kill the Heat. That got pretty obvious pretty quickly, and Holiday is just the wrong guy for the Heat to face, you know. And I also think that Holiday's ideal matchup in this series would have been James Harden. So it's kind of weird that now I don't know where he really specializes, but I do know that he needs to hit some three pointers. He killed them. And not that he was the only one, but Tucker, I thought, played a great game. He can handle Durant to the extent that Durant can be handled. You know, he can hold Durant to 28 points on fairly typical Durant usage. That's a victory against the Nets, you know.
Well, it's kind of interesting, right? Like, those are your two wing defenders that you're going to employ on Irving and on KD. And I think Holiday could do probably just as good of a job on KD as Tucker could or did in that
game.
See,
I'm not sure about that just because of strength. KD's deceptively strong, I think.
Sure. I think where I'm going with it is the inverse of that. You couldn't put Tucker on Kyrie because he can't move his feet like that.
No way, right.
So I think if you're Bud, you're kind of forced into, we got to put Tucker on KD. We got to put Drew on Kyrie. And with Kyrie, what it's going to come down to, and what Kyrie was good about, I thought, in the first game, was actually accepting the screen and trying to punish again. What's the weak point of the Bucks defense? Get in that mid-range, shoot from there, create from there. And what can Holiday do? I mean, he's going to try and fight over the top of that screen and chase it and get that rear view contest and do that. But it's not a one-on-one assignment in the same way that guarding Kevin Durant is, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. And I do think Kyrie Irving, it's so easy to forget how good he is. You know, he is the third wheel among the three, theoretically. He's the most ambidextrous finisher in the league right now. I mean, there are times when you think somebody's got him hemmed in on the angle and he switches hands and he knows he's going to switch hands the entire time. Nobody switches hands in the air, I think, as well as he does. And I also think those acrobatic, either beneath the rim or almost falling out of bounds as he banks in a shot, are just automatic for him. And I think what those can do against a rim protecting team like the Bucks is sap your spirit. I think if when you play defense really well and somebody scores anyway, and Kyrie's been doing that to a lot of people, it's just in this particular case, the Bucks need to play good defense and feel like they're playing good defense to be in this series, I think.
Yeah, they get a rhythm out of their defense.
Yeah.
That's where they because that gets them out on transition. No,
exactly. And Brook Lopez in particular. I mean, in fact, what was crazy about this last game was his offense kind of fed his defense. I mean, he got off on offense right away.
Right.
A couple of those reverse slams were fun, actually. But, you know, and it's also kind of good to see Brook Lopez not on the perimeter. You know,
well, that was last round, too.
I know. And almost a lot more this season. I mean, I think that's one of their changes to some extent.
This is kind of a weird comparison, but I go back to Kyrie needs to be disciplined in this. He needs to be good and he needs to be disciplined. And Devin Booker in that Suns series against the Lakers, like, he's their Kyrie, right? Like, he's their, you know, go create a bucket for them when they need it. And I like Booker's discipline in that series, where there was times and places where he had to go, and there was times and places where he had to get Crowder involved, he had to get Bridges involved, he had to feed Ayton. And I really thought Booker towed that line well. And it's weird. On some of his, like, he kind of got like a bad rap in whatever it was, like games 3 and 4 or something, that Booker didn't have that many points. And I was like, yeah, but he was engaging, you know, guys.
If we want to flip over into that conversation.
No, I don't yet. I don't. We'll go to Suns next.
I I will gush about Booker's playoffs thus far.
We'll get there. Right. But what I'm talking about is there's like, I've liked Booker's discipline there. I think Kyrie needs to have that. And I think the other side of the coin is what Kyrie could do when things could go sideways is if he tries to be Donovan Mitchell. Mm. And Donovan Mitchell is not that disciplined.
Right.
He wants to go cook on his own. And he's like, all right, I want Rudy to set me the screen. And then I want to like cross. Now I want to isolate.
Right.
What the Jazz need Donovan Mitchell to do is just do what the same thing Conley does. Run the pick and roll. Just run the pick and roll. Get into the middle, shoot it, go to the rim, find your shooters. Like, that's it. That discipline. Like, this is the playoffs.
First of all, I don't think that either Kyrie nor Donovan Mitchell have an ounce of that kind of discipline.
Well, and that's – I mean, that's been my – I've been big on the Nets all year. But my concern with the Nets from day one has been in Kyrie taking a spot in the pecking roll above what he deserves, in my opinion, which is the third slot. And – to his See, credit,
that, again, that's what's better about. I like him in the second slot next to KD.
So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's the blessing in disguise. But I just think if this does crumble for the Nets, which I'm not assuming, but I could see it, mm-hmm. it's because we start seeing Kyrie over assert himself in the offense, even if Harden comes back, or even in this, it's like KD's still the best option. And if we get into one of these games and it is close and it is the fourth quarter and it's a game of those last 5-8 possessions, like five of those 8 possessions better go to KD. You know what I mean?
And I think that I will say the same thing you were talking about in terms of scenario, although I would call it losing my cool. I think they lose their cool. And I think part of that is I don't want to make it 5 out of 8. I want to make sure that if KD is doubled and Kyrie is open, that he gets the ball to a guy who is just a bucket as well as KD is. I mean, that's the thing about all three of those guys, which I keep coming back to, is when you have three immaculate bucket getters, two guys not getting the bucket on a play are going to be keeping score in the back of their mind, you know? And so, and they all have reason to.
In theory.
And they all have reason to.
Yeah.
In theory, I mean, they're all great for a reason. And one of the reasons they're great is because they.
It hasn't been a problem yet. It hasn't been a problem yet.
Right. Because they don't have that kind of pressure on them. And that's why I'm interested to see what happens, because it'll happen eventually. They'll get into a series, or at least a couple of games. I mean, Kawhi and Paul George had to work it out. You know, all these guys have to work it out to some extent. Jokic and Murray had to work it out kind of last year. I thought it was really cool the way Jokic said, oh, Murray's going for 50 a night. Fine with me, you know? I mean, but that doesn't happen all the time. And so I will agree with you, particularly given Embiid's injury and what we saw out of Philly today. I always saw Philly as the biggest stumbling block after, I mean, I called the Lakers for the ring, so obviously that's not happening. But after the Lakers went down, I began to think if Brooklyn is going to be denied, it would probably be Philly. Now I'm thinking maybe the winner of this series, unless, you know, Philly can put it together. And there are some fascinating teams over in the West. But if you talk about a combination of playoff experience, high-end, super talent, et cetera, yeah, I mean, I think Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly, the Clippers, and I would actually say Phoenix is in there. But anyway.
Well, let's take a quick break and roll over to the West for the Suns-Nuggets series.
Okay.
Back in a second. I want to again tell you about Subtext Bookstore, located in downtown St. Paul by Rice Park in the St. Paul Hotel. I told you all on the last show how I went down to Subtext to pick up my copy of Jake Fisher's book on tanking in the NBA called Built to Lose. If you're interested in buying Jake's book or any other book for some summer reading this summer, I urge you to check out Subtext. I mean, if you're buying a book, you might as well do it locally. It's just as easy to purchase a book at subtextbooks.com.
as it is to buy a book anywhere else online. Subtext has a super clean and mobile-friendly website for browsing and buying books. Subtextbooks.com. Buy your book there. Get it delivered to your home or go pick it up at Subtext Bookstore in St. Paul. Again, the website is subtextbooks.com. And when you shop at subtextbooks.com, you get free shipping on any order over $30 by using code DANE at checkout. That's subtextbooks.com and code DANE at checkout to get free shipping on your order of at least $30. Again, shout out Matt from Subtext, who's a fan of the show. It was a no-brainer for me to partner with this locally owned bookstore. So head over to Subtext Bookstore and don't forget to use code DANE for free shipping on that $30 order. So Britt, as we think, or as I think about this Suns-Nuggets matchup, I can't really wrap my head around like those two teams playing against each other. And what I normally do is I'm like, all right, if it works for this team, this is how it works. And if it's going to work for the other team, this is how it's going to work. And I can't get there with the Nuggets. I don't know what this is going to work for the Nuggets. And I don't know if I'm just missing something. And maybe the answer is just Jokic going off. Maybe that's what you'll tell me. But normally when I'm at that point, to me, that typically signals a series that isn't going to be all that close.
Uh-huh.
And that I think where I would be leaning is that this Suns team is superior to this Nuggets team and, you know, might kind of roll their way through this with a superior amount of talent, particularly in the backcourt.
Yes. I think that would be my leaning too. I think, can we be assured that Aiden won't get in foul trouble? I mean, it happened almost the entire Lakers series.
You remember when he played Cat both times?
All I'm saying is that in general, when he is in foul trouble, that's a drop off, boy. You know, you're going to
Dario.
Saric or Frank the Tank, or there's one other guy in there. Anyway, there's a third guy.
Yeah,
well, I don't have the roster. Well, it wasn't. It was they brought in another guy. Anyway, you have the roster up there?
Yeah. Booker, Ayton, Bridges, Crowder, Paul, Campaign, Cam Johnson. I mean, Cam Johnson was at the four. They played some Torrey Craig at the four.
Yeah.
I mean, Kaminsky was kind of took over the backup center minutes once Dario got.
You know, actually, they did go small and played Crowder, I think, a small ball five. I don't think that can happen with Jokic.
Yeah. I think it's Dario. I think Dario is important in this series.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
Kaminsky can't guard him.
Dario can't.
Obviously.
Dario can't guard Jokic.
At least Dario Dario is substantially stronger than Kaminsky.
Yes, yes. But you talk about putting somebody in the popcorn machine. Jokic is going
to. I'm not betting on Dario.
Jokic will make him jump up on a stool and beg for cookies. You know, I mean, there's no way that Saric can deal with Jokic.
But what you got it. But it's like it's.
So then what happens is I think they go scramble, which is kind of what they did.
They do that well.
They did that well against the Lakers. When you looked at that series, I mean, obviously the AD injury was a pivotal thing, but they also played the Lakers tough with both of those guys on the floor, and they stepped up a level from the regular season to the playoffs, and Booker was a big reason for it. And I also think that Ayton played out of his mind.
I mean, Ayton was incredible.
If he can do that again, then I think this is over in five or six. If he can't, then I think it might be over in six or seven.
We've talked about the Suns a lot this year, just in our
random. I love the Suns.
Yeah, I know. In our random NBA musings. And what I've said the whole time is every game when I'm watching the Suns play during the regular season, I always I stop and I rewind the little Chris Paul teaching moments with DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah.
And I remember at the beginning of the year, some of it, I was just like, oh, CP's going to snap on this dude and he's going to be like, we got to make a trade at the deadline. Like we need a five. But he worked on him, man. He worked on Ayton all year. Like do X, Y, and Z. You know, you don't got to be a superstar. You got to be our third guy. And to be our third guy, be aggressive on the offensive rebounds, you know, catch the ball
right
and dunk it, which the catch of the ball part is tricky for him sometimes. But
But look at his shooting percentage against the Lakers. It was like 85% or something.
I remember just like one point where the graphic came up. Maybe it's just like game two. And he literally made 26 of his first 29 shots. Like, what the hell? And they're not
that's
just
a guy
like,
who knows his role.
And you know, that's what I'm saying. To his credit and to CP's credit was like, this. We need you to be this. And there's probably a time in DeAndre Ayton's like career, like, I think if he has aspirations of kind of climbing the center ladder or whatever, maybe he becomes like a mid-post kind of guy, like Embiid, where he squares you at 15 and takes that shot, like that bank shot, or tries to, you know, roll you up into the post or something.
I hate
like that
shot, by the way, especially for Embiid, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, well, Embiid made it this year. Yeah. Jokic makes it. I mean, but that's what I'm saying. It's like up right to if Ayton has aspirations of being an all-NBA center someday, right? Like right, that's probably how he expands his game, because it's not going to be three-point shooting, whatever. Whatever, don't even think about that in this series.
Right.
Don't even think about that when you're surrounded by Chris Paul and Devin Booker, who are already cooking from, you know, they're going to get in that mid-range area right there, and you're surrounded by shooters. Literally do the exact same thing you did in the Lakers series. You know, push Jokic off of the glass. Like that one game, Drummond got off. Was that game three?
But
Drummond
only like, not for for two or three spurts, but not consistently.
But it was all offensive rebounds.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah, I know. Well, and so, that's because Drummond is probably one of the top five of the game at that.
And
that's all so he can do, really.
Well, yeah, but Jokic also has that skill set.
But he Jokic, does.
He's crafty. He's crafty offensive rebounder.
But I don't think that
he's like K-Love.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah. No, I know. What I would say about that is that if they concentrate on Jokic in the low block, I think that will be strictly to get Ayton in foul trouble, which is how they're going to win. So now that I'm thinking it through, I think you're right. I think that's what they'll have to do, because I don't think you want Jokic high pick and roll. I think you want Jokic elbow pick and roll on in, you know.
Right. Did the Suns play the Wolves three times this year? Do you remember three games? I for sure remember two.
Yeah.
And I remember it was the start of one of Kat's really bad chunks of like eight games of the season.
Uh-huh.
And it was because they just fronted the hell out of him in the post.
Right.
They just had Ayton go
over.
Well,
plus the they have guys. I mean, Bridges is like a nice little piece of gristle. And Crowder is like a larger piece of gristle. I mean, but right, they're so much fun. But just because, you know, you talk about Paul basically drawing a picture for Ayton every game. All Booker had to see is how Chris Paul plays.
Yeah.
And then he started to play the same way, only he knows he's a better shooter than Chris Paul will ever be from beyond 16 feet. So he throws that in too. Well, in this particular case, Paul would thread the needle to a cutter, but this time I think I'm just going to hit a three, you know?
Right.
But I think his decision-making has improved in leaps and bounds because of Paul's example. And I think Paul's injury in the first round enabled him to prove that he can be Chris Paul-like. I mean, he really was.
He was empowered.
He was. I mean, the dude has taken a big step this year. And it's a step that is not like the Donovan Mitchell Murray step from last
year.
It's not
agree.
50 points. It's 38 and 9. You know, and good defense, by the way.
I was going to say, yeah, he's been locked, the whole year on defense. And he's never going to be like your
But remember how gangly... he used to say, who's the better defender? Who's the worst defender of the three? Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, or D'Angelo Russell. Who knows? I mean, they're all about the same basket. And you can't say that now.
No, I mean, Booker, what he's really embraced on the defensive end is, you know, weak side awareness. Knowing when to come over, you know, because they tuck him away. I mean, they'll probably put him on Campazzo or whatever, like Monte Morris or something over there where his job is going to be square those guys up when he can, but also be weak side aware where when
when Jokic starts coming to the basket, dig in, or whoever is attacking. And I think, you know, that's really, for me, when I'm watching a young player, like, who was a bad defender and has some problems. We talked about this a little bit with Ant.
Right.
Like, this, where I was like, all right, he's starting to see the game. You see him rotate over for some weeks at help on the baseline. Right. You're like, yeah, he didn't know how to do that a month ago. And Booker is doing that stuff consistently. He knows that's his defensive job.
Booker feels like he's entering his prime. You know how you wait for players to get into their prime? You know, and I'll be dead honest with you. We are still waiting for Cat to enter his prime. You know, that place where you go, oh, you know, you have to consider this guy now, you know, you have to consider him for all NBA, you know, and.
Or just to consider him to be somebody who can take over and win a series.
Yeah. Which,
like, that's kind of like
the guys who should be all NBA.
Yeah. Right. Right.
But I mean,
I would say that's even a step up from all NBA.
Yeah. You're probably. Yeah. You're right. But anyway, you have that there. And so I think Booker and Paul and Aiden are going to be the reason they win the series. But I also think Bridges, Michael Porter Jr. Who do you think's on Michael Porter Jr.? I think it'll be Bridges, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, right?
I think that's going to be a fascinating matchup. But
they put Crowder on Braun.
Right? Huh?
They put Crowder on Braun. I guess
they put Crowder on Braun some, and I think Crowder will do a lot of doubling on Jokic.
I mean, and like we said at the beginning, and this is just true in NBA basketball now with the proliferation of screens, it's not one guy, you know.
It's all fluid, right?
it's about that scrambling. You know, they're going to
Crowder is the tough guy. Bridges is is the thinner tough guy. But Bridges is the kind of guy. If Porter's out there dribbling on the perimeter, the guy I want guarding him is not Crowder. I want Bridges to be guarding him.
Sure.
I think he can guard him. I think another wild card for Denver, in addition to Aiden getting in foul trouble, is everybody beginning to talk about Porter. I don't like Porter, so I don't necessarily. I don't think this is going to happen. Well, anytime I talk about Porter, I have to say that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that he's not capable of getting 35 three straight games and changing flipping the tenor of this whole series. Because we all know what Jokic can do when he's got a bombardier on his side, you know, and that would make it a whale of a series. I will tell you, if Denver finds some heroes like Monty Morris was found in the last game there, And
Austin Rivers the game before that.
Austin Rivers, I know.
Hey, I mean,
I know. There's a deal with the devil made somewhere there, man.
So that's kind of, I mean, I think the obvious X factor is Porter. But in watching Denver in these playoffs thus far, which was often like morning afterwards because it was happening at the same time as the Lakers.
Right.
You know. To that whole, your whole grizzled point with Phoenix and this like kind of synergy, like this Denver group is tight. Like those bench dudes know their role. Like Millsap, Jamichael Green, they're not bitching about playing 17 minutes a game. They're like, when we're in, we're going to do our thing, you know?
Right.
And I thought that swung a couple of the Portland games where, you know, where Portland starts toiling around with their canter and mellow lineups and stuff like that.
Right.
And if those guys aren't, you know, making shots, right, then there's this opportunity of the other team. And I know at one point of that series when I looked it up, I don't know how it fared at the end, but their minutes with Jokic off the floor were not, at least to the eye test, were not all that bad. And if we go through all the other stars around, you know, around the playoffs, I was just looking after that Mavs game. It's like, holy shit, some of the numbers with Luka off the floor for Dallas there. You know, I mean, that's been a thing with Embiid forever in Philly. It's like, credit to Mike Malone, credit to the bench dudes or the role players, whatever you want to call them on Denver, for being like pros and not like
They don't have this like anxious energy of we're just trying to survive this
right.
4 minutes.
They are. You're right. They're absolutely a tough team. I think when it comes to team synergy, they still take a backseat to the Suns. I just think the Phoenix Suns.
Well, they just might be number one on in the power rankings of that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I would say. I would say that if you look at the Suns roster on paper and then you watch them on the court, you suddenly have a different idea of what they are on paper. You go, whoa.
Which is probably what a lot of people are like seeing now, right?
But I mean, really I love the Suns during the regular season. I did. I love them. And I even tweeted out a couple of times, don't sleep on the Suns, you know, ta-da. I did not expect them to beat the Lakers. And I don't care if AD was hurt or not. They played out of their ass in that series. They were great. They were better than I had any reasonable expectation of them being able to be.
It's like
Chris Paul was hurt.
I know. That's what I was going to say. It's like I could have seen a world where the Suns won that series, you know, going in, but that world would have totally included
playing, like,
incredible. Yeah, shooting like 66% from mid-range and
getting about 22 and 12, right?
Yeah, right. Like and that wasn't, you know, that wasn't it. And that, you know, again, that's credit to Monte Williams.
It just coached really. I mean, that offensive set that they ran when they didn't have Paul, those dribble handoffs with Booker got to be the point guard as he curled around the screen. Mm-hmm. And then he had Cam, whatever.
I was
going to
say, yeah. Cam Payton comes in and starts doing that.
And then he bombed from the corner. And then Bridges would come over and occupy like the little floater mid range. Booker had a choice of hitting him, or going up as for himself. The great Laker defense couldn't figure that out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was fun.
They're a hell of a team. I just like, I started this off by being like, I have no idea how the Nuggets are going to win. I just like, I gotta like give, obviously, you know, the Jokic respect goes without saying. I think he's the MVP, right? Like, you're going to get that. The thing is if somehow Denver goes on like a magical run, and I hear people, you know, say, like pointing to, you know, the 2011 Mavs or whatever, like is Jokic Dirk there? Well, then you got to find your Jason Terrys, you got to have your Tyson Chandlers. You know, that team was perfect.
What better team fits that description? Phoenix or Denver?
Dirk a little bit better. Yeah, I hear what you're saying though. The other, it's about
the
others.
About
almost.
Like a team that was good. Everybody knew they were good. Like Dallas. Dallas wasn't chopped liver that year.
Yeah.
And Dallas didn't lose people. You know. Mm-hmm. I just think that again, I'll go back to the idea: you get Aiden in foul trouble, or you have those supporting jump shooters play out of their minds, like Michael Porter Jr. If Michael Porter Jr. averages more than 25 a game in the series, then I think it might be a long series. Or if Monty Morris averages like 20 and 8, you know, if their backcourt and their wing guys can relieve some of the pressure on Jokic, and Jokic can put some of the pressure on Aiden, those two dynamics could be how Denver springs what I would regard as an upset.
So I'm looking at the odds right now, and they don't have Jazz Clippers posted yet, but I'm assuming that's going to be pretty even odds, wouldn't you assume?
I'll be honest with you. I would think the Clippers will be slight favorites.
Yeah, whatever. Close, right. One way or right. The other. I'm looking at this now, and the Suns are more favored to win their series right now at -221 than the Bucks are currently at -209, than the Nets are, and the Nets already got a game.
Yeah, that makes sense to me though.
They're the most favored team.
Do you
remember?
Do you remember how much they disrespected Denver in the Portland series? Everybody thought Portland was going to win that game. You and I were about the only people who thought Denver was going to beat Portland. I mean, that's the way it seemed anyway.
I just think that's people pointing to like, oh, well, they don't have Jamal Murray, you know.
And Dame is great. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and that's what I go back to with this Denver team is it's like
is no shade to Jamal Murray.
They do have something. There's no doubt about it. I love Mike Malone. You know, I just will always be grateful to Sacramento for making sure that the Wolves have competition as like the stupidest franchise in NBA history. I mean, getting rid of Mike Malone. Oh my God. The one guy who got through to DeMarcus Cousins, the one guy.
It's,
oh my God.
The Kings, man.
Yeah.
Would you take Denver if they're playing the Clippers or the Jazz? Would you pick them in the series?
No.
So they're the clear, like, fourth best team in the West right now?
Yes, I think that's true.
Are you going Phoenix 1?
Yes.
Phoenix is your favorite out of the West right now?
Well, I mean, I want to see if the Clippers wipe Utah, if the Clippers suddenly decide, hey, we found what we need. Mm-hmm. The Clippers have the highest ceiling of any team left in the West, I think. But if you're asking me who feels like magic right now, I think Phoenix feels like magic, you know? And I think that magic is what's going to happen. This is already, I mean, with the Lakers out, it's a whole new game.
Well, you know? Right. When the field is even, magic, you know, is going to play from a talent standpoint.
Right.
When those four teams are all comparable.
Right.
You know, it is, you're right. It is going to be, and that goes back to the Dirk thing. Right. That's what Dallas was. They had the magic.
Right.
Well, let's flip over to that that Clips Jazz series, but let's take another quick break.
All right.
Like any good sports team, hiring the right employees for your front office is just as important as recruiting the best players for the game. That's why you need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy, with tools like Indeed Instant Match giving you quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description immediately, and Indeed skills tests that on average reduce hiring time by 27%. You can choose from more than 136 skills tests, then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for the applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit. To upgrade your job, post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire, offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. So, Brett, we're recording this right after the Los Angeles Clippers eliminated the Luka Doncic's in the first round. I was probably the most fun series. Was that the most fun series of the first round?
I really like Phoenix, the Lakers, of course, for personal reasons.
You probably like Memphis too.
Oh, I did.
Desmond Bane.
I mean, but you know, Memphis got less fun games 4 and 5.
That's true.
Right.
So yeah, the Clippers, I mean, the Clippers took care of business. Kawhi reminded us that he's still a superhero on the level of KD, you know, and probably.
Oh yeah, I think he's definitely, I would say he's better than KD.
Whew.
But
I don't know about that, but
no. I think
same tier.
If KD played pretty good defense today, let's see that happen more and more and more. Put it this way, if the Nets,
oh man, you're just really staying and see it to believe it.
If the Nets were playing the Mavs, and you said, "Okay, KD, you go play Luka and lock him up," then you might have a conversation. But Kawhi is getting his casual 35 the way KD gets his casual 35, and Kawhi's locking up their best player on the other end. I think that's better. KD doesn't have, KD is not any more of an automatic bucket from mid-range as Kawhi is. Slightly better from three-point range, not better at the rim. You know, so I think it's all, you know, I think KD is more electric, but Kawhi, I would still rather have Kawhi on my team than KD.
Interesting.
I think he's a better defender. I mean, I don't think that's even close.
I don't think that's what this Jazz Clippers series is going to come down to, though, is how good Kawhi is. Like, Kawhi's going to be up there.
No,
Kawhi's
going to
do his thing. And
I think, let me jump in here just to say, I have no idea what Utah will play like. Do you? I mean, do you have any idea, like, if Utah will be great, terrible, in between? There's so many variables with that team. Is Mike Conley going to be healthy enough to really give him a boost? Or is he just going to be crushed by the physicality of that Clipper team? Is Gobert going to be able to be hidden on a non-shooter? And if so, is that, who's that man who shot lights out?
I think Zubats will play again.
Well, I don't know. If I'm the Clippers, I'm not sure I want that.
Yeah.
I mean, why not?
Just stretch him out again. Yeah.
Stretch him out. And but then again, would Rudy Gobert just totally make him pay for that? It's possible. Right. I don't know.
Man, I've gone back and forth on that team. I've gone back.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's because, I mean, Joe Ingles, I've never seen a guy who looks like a public accountant look like a superstar one game and a public accountant the next game. I mean, it's just, they have so many guys like that, you know. If two guys don't play really well, then Royce O'Neal is not worth nearly as much. But if they do, then Royce O'Neal's a cool little piece. I don't know this Utah team. I've seen them a fair bit. I've seen them probably 15 times, like end-to-end in games this year. And I've seen, you know, they've been on a league pass surf night many times. And I love their offense is a juggernaut now. But I don't know in the playoffs if it necessarily will be.
But I don't know if the Clippers will be either.
I don't know.
I mean, it comes down to both of them shot making. Like, are you going to hit your threes? A lot of their offense is going to come down to that.
I trust in the Clippers more than I trust in the Jazz. I will not be surprised if the Jazz win in 6 games. I'll be surprised if the Jazz win in 4 or 5. If the Jazz win in 6 or 7, I won't be shocked. Because I don't know. I don't know them. And what's crazy about that is they've gone on runs where they've probably played better than any NBA team in 10 to 12 game stretches any team this year.
Like multiple times.
Yeah. At the same time, you know, what you were saying about Donovan Mitchell is right. What if Donovan Mitchell is missing his shots?
That's what I'm concerned about.
Who's going to tell him, don't shoot anymore? No,
he's on one. He's on his, like, I got to go get my same, like, be my bubble self, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
That when I watched him in that Memphis series, I'm just like, yeah, like, he could, I mean, he's a shot maker. He's special in isolation. He can attack all three levels of the floor. Like, he's a great offensive player.
But the Clips have a couple of guys who like that kind of player.
I know. And I just think how you beat the Clips, if you're Utah, is with diligence of, like, you have the best pick and roll game in the league. You just do, because you got Rudy, who's as good as it gets as a screener there.
Right.
And you got the shooters.
He's great on the roll. Right.
Yeah. You know, and it's, I just think the way Utah wins the series is pounding the rock, as in, like, do the same thing over, hammer the rock until it cracks.
And if that happens, I will tell you that the Clippers have guys with an edge who play for them. I mean, Morris, if they are pounding inside, Rudy Gobert will be laid out more than once. He will be laid out. And Morris may wind up sitting a game or so. Beverly
sitting.
Yeah. Beverly is not playing anymore. But again, I mean, and I kind of disagree with the decision. We went out for lunch the other day, and we were laughing about Reggie Jackson on the way out. Reggie Jackson, I mean, Ty Lue knew what he was doing. If Reggie Jackson is hot, Utah's in trouble, because Utah's got to contend with those two wing guys. And those two wing guys just love to, you know, drive and penetrate and then flare to the corners. And so their teams have to be really corner conscious, you know, for Morris's threes, or, you know, they got like four guys who can go to the corner and bury that corner three. But Reggie Jackson likes to just come down if nobody's on him. He likes that straight above the break three.
Who's the third best player on the Clippers?
It really does depend, doesn't it?
That's this big of a question mark, because it is in my head too.
Yeah, but you know what?
That's concerning. And except, it's not because there's like an abundance of them. But it's not a good one.
I guarantee you they have the best eighth man on any of the teams that are left, though. See, that's the thing.
I don't know about that.
I'll give you a perfect example. Yeah. Nicholas Batum.
Been awesome.
I mean, the dude is 6'9 or 6'10, 240 pounds. I mean, it's kind of sneaky. He plays a sneaky small ball five out there, mm-hmm. and is his decision making, he's such a smart guy. His court IQ is off the charts. He's always doing something smart out there.
Not to draw everything back to the Wolves, the team we cover, but he's the Rubio, right? He's the little guy. He's the little guy in everyone's ears over there. Like, hey, we're doing this. We're doing that.
Right.
You saw him today. Like, Terrence Mann played really well, but kind of like, hey, you know,
he lost a little bit. Right. Which, you know, he's prone to do. Right. I mean, between Morris and Mann, they do have a couple of hotheads.
I think Marcus Morris is their third best player.
And I agree.
That would be fine if we're talking about title contention if you had two Kawhis. They don't have two Kawhis. They got Kawhi in one tier and Paul George a big old step down. Like,
all right, here's an interesting question for you then.
Okay.
Who was the second best player in this series?
Paul George.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
No, the Clippers have the two best players in the series. So they don't necessarily really need a great third guy if they are two guys.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like the Brook Lopez thing, though, with Rudy. Like, can Quinn find a way? Because Rudy's the same thing, right? He is the identity
of
the team in a weird way that, like, Brook is that in Milwaukee because he defines
the defense. And Gobert is a much better Brook because his rim running is mm-hmm. – I mean, Brook doesn't rim run like that anymore.
Yeah. Well, Rudy's a two-way player. Like, Rudy is an offensive weapon for them in a couple different ways. I don't know. I'm just
and
so
is
out
a better
on Paul
rim
George.
Protector.
I might just say Rudy Gobert is the second best player.
All right. And I wouldn't necessarily argue with you, but it's a toss-up. It's a coin flip between Utah's best player and the Clippers' second best player. It's a toss-up.
Yeah, but if we're going down the line, though, even if we say, all right, it's Kawhi and PG are 1 and 2 in the series, the Jazz might have the next six.
No.
Five.
I don't know. You got to give me five before I get to Marcus Morris or Batum or
Batum.
You know,
I could give you five Jazz players who are better than Batum.
I'm not sure.
Their starting lineup. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Because even Royce O'Neal's their worst player, and Jordan Clarkson. Like, I know you hate Jordan Clarkson, but I don't. I mean, that's kind of what the series comes down to, right? It's this whole idea of, okay, you got the top heavy team versus the team. And the Jazz have been as good in the regular season, at least, they have been as good of a team as I've seen in years. And that's why I was talking about at the end of the year, like, they might be my pick out of the West.
Uh-huh.
And I was feeling really good about the Jazz at the end of the season. Then I realized I was feeling really good about the Jazz at the end of the season because I love the way they play without Mitchell. That's
well,
what it was because Mitchell
also,
wasn't playing.
Let me remind you that even more than the Bucks now, because at least the Bucks, you know, drew seven swords through the heart of the Heat in the last series, the Jazz are under the gun as playoff failures.
Well, so are the Clippers. I mean, it's a.
Yeah,
they both got a lot on the line.
I actually think, though, that the Jazz, as the number one seed, you know, They did have the best record in the NBA, right? They were better than the Sixers. So,
I think so.
So I think that I am going to say the Clippers will win this in seven. I think it'll be a fun series. But I will tell you, I myself am not enamored so much. I like good ball movement. Utah at its best has good ball movement, but not as good as Phoenix and not as good as some other teams.
Man. I think they do.
Yeah, I know it's Quinn's game, and I know they do the whip it around the horn weave, and I know that both Ingles and Conley are really good at it. And Gobert
and Mitchell when he's disciplined.
Mitchell,
the one who's not is Clarkson, and he's that's his role.
Yeah, well, like, that's what he's crazy. The Lou Williams prototype, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think that the Jazz will beat the Clippers?
I think so.
Okay. In seven or less?
I mean, seven, where I'll go like 51%. You know, classic cop-out answer, but...
No, that's all right.
I just...
And you could be like right. Like I said, I don't know the Jazz. I just talked myself into...
I'm concerned about Mitchell, man. That's why I keep... I mean,
let's see, I actually think that when you stare into the abyss after you've choked, they were down 3-2 to the Mavs and had to go into Dallas and win, and then win the first time any home team had won. And for all your talk about it being a two-man team, which I'm not totally disagreeing with, they wore down the Mavs with numbers. I mean, they just wore them down.
But Dallas is the same. I mean, Dallas doesn't have two guys either. They're kind of the same.
I mean, Carlisle played Porzingis and Boban. I mean, poor Boban. Boban is an inch away from death right now. He's lying on a bed getting intravenous fluids. That dude is never.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. But like,
did he ever leave the ground for a rebound or a block? I never saw it.
It's funny because when Boban normally plays, which is like 13 minutes in a game, if he does get in, he actually runs the floor pretty well.
And he ran the floor pretty well.
But he got tired because it was 30
minutes.
Tired
doesn't begin to say it. I mean, what Boban began to do was if he wasn't on the side where the rebound was going, he got a head start. I mean, you know, he knew he had to get back on defense. I mean, the poor dude, that I will tell you, having said all that, I know we're supposed to be talking about forward-looking previews, but wasn't that first quarter with Boban and Porzingis and a red-hot Luka, wasn't that fun?
So fun.
The feed from, like, Boban to a baseline charging Porzingis for a slam. I mean, what is this? What kind of league is this?
I love it, man. It's like so – I mean, of course Carlisle's the one, but so few teams ever – counter small ball with big ball.
Big ball, right. 7-4 and 7-3. I don't think there's ever been a front court, a 4-5 combination that was over 14 and a half feet tall.
Oh my God. When I saw that was the starting lineup of
they did a little bit in game six too.
No, they started starting Boban in game four.
Oh, yeah. But was Porzingis on the floor all the time? I don't remember.
Yeah, they started. And then it was like, I thought that was just, again, super brilliant by Carlisle. Right. They would go in these shifts where Kristaps and Boban would always play together.
Right.
And then they would both come out and it would be Powell and Kleba would come in. And that was, now they have the small.
Like the Bobsey twins compared to the other two. Right.
Exactly. It was. And then Willie Cauley-Stein made an appearance.
Yeah. You know, not for very long. Thank God.
No. But
yeah, they have to trim some bigs from their roster next year.
Them and the Lakers and the Mavs is like, all right, why do you guys both have five centers here? When the Lakers were looking good and AD was actually playing five, they scan over to the Lakers bench and they do the little panoramic. And it's like,
Gasol, and there are three more. Drummond, right, Marcus right. Morris, Harrell. It's like how centers galore. Right. Oh man, it was fun.
Okay, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, let's pin this one down. We're both the closest series.
We disagree. Our ultimate pick. I disagree because I have no idea who's going to win. I'm picking the Clippers because of their. I'll be honest. I'm picking the Clippers because they've got a couple of guys who have been through, for better and for worse, playoffs. You know they've been heroes. People forget how fetid Paul George was when Miami was everything and Indiana gave them all they wanted.
That's fair.
And so they both know what it's like to rise up in the playoffs. And I think that playoff experience will come in handy. I think that they're going to be very relieved not to have to deal with Luka and to play typical basketball.
It was not a typical series. That's for sure. 2-3 zone, 14 and a half feet. It was bizarre. I don't know, man. I wish we were doing this. We've kind of done on the past.
We've seen one game or two.
We've seen one game. Like, if we would have talked yesterday, or we did when we were at lunch, we were talking. Right. I was like, Milwaukee, Brooklyn. I'm like, I'm picking Brooklyn, but I don't feel that good about it. Now, one game into it, I feel very confident in Brooklyn. And I think.
And that's odd to me. I will say you're right. If it goes 2-0 or 3-0,
not very confident. I'm not saying it's like.
I think Milwaukee will win one of the next two games, guaranteed.
Vegas has it minus 200. I think 2-1. You know, 2-1 odds that Brooklyn wins is. I'd take that.
Wins what? Wins the whole series.
Wins the series. Yeah, I think that's. So there's a path. I agree. There's a path from Milwaukee, but. I don't know. For me, that's a big part of. Once I feel like I can see a game, I feel a lot more confident in maybe a rational.
Okay, well, so this is a perfect segue. The Hawks and the Sixers.
Man, they're down like 16 early, and I didn't feel like Philly was having that much trouble on offense. Like they were getting, Embiid was going a little bit. Simmons was attacking the rim.
I thought that team was not ready to play. I thought
it was
that
okay. Doc was it because Rivers, they played? They played. Is it because they played the Wizards in the first round and didn't really compete?
Everybody's talking about the Bucks and the Sixers. I mean, I'm the Bucks and the Nets. Everybody's going, oh, the Bucks and the Nets, Bucks and the Nets. Nobody's saying, oh, the Hawks and the Sixers, and. Either that happened. Here are my two theories, because it's very obvious that they blew it from the middle of the first quarter until like 3 minutes or 4 minutes into the second quarter. That's where the game was decided. And the Sixers played like horseshit. They played either overconfidently or they played like they weren't expecting Embiid to be part of the game. Their game plan. Those are the only two things I can think of.
Can I add a third?
Yeah.
Trey.
No.
I don't think.
I disagree. I don't think Trey had that great a game.
I thought it was kind of the same thing as like Luca in the other series where
I totally disagree.
Whoa. Where they didn't have like an answer exactly for how to slow him. I mean, Atlanta was running that double drag sort of thing. And so old ass Danny Green has to come over one screen, two screens to chase Trey down there. And I'm what that first series go six games, five games, whatever it went. And now this Trey has gotten wherever he wants to.
They
in the
made
middle of the
their
lane.
Run, their big run when Trey went to the bench.
Yeah. But then also Trey came in and he was getting in there and distributing. And that's when they started hitting all the threes.
And what happened when they decided at the beginning of the second half, all right, we're taking Trey out.
He's not Luka. You're right. But
and not only that, but
I mean, you got to give Trey some credit for what he's been.
I will give Trey a lot of credit and I'll give Nate McMillan a lot of credit because what I do see My rap on, you've heard this a million times because I've bitched about Trey a million times, probably.
Yeah, I don't think either of us are big Trey guys.
I think he's a ball hog. But what I am seeing more and more under Nate McMillan especially, and I do want to credit McMillan because I did see the change in him happening. And I love Lloyd. You know, I think of Pierce, right?
Lloyd Pierce. Yeah.
I think
not the drummer, but
yeah, not Lloyd Price. He's a blues singer. But R&B singer. Right. That's, I've called him Lloyd Price more than once. So I finally decided to call him by his real name.
LP.
There you go. Yeah. Vinyl for short. But anyway, I really like him as a coach. And Rocco just swore by him as a guy who made him into the great defender he is. So I always had a soft spot for him. And so and Nate McMillan is a hard ass. I mean,
great interview.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, he is. But also, the guy who, this is a problem of being old. The point guard for Portland for a long time, who played for the Wolves for a while, was a great post up point guard.
Andre Miller.
Thank you. Andre Miller, and Nate McMillan just butted heads all the time because Nate McMillan wanted to call everything. Every play from the sideline. And so, you know, and this is obviously quite some time ago, but then, you know, after a while he wore out his welcome in Indiana, I thought he did a great job, but he's kind of like what Doug Collins used to be, a guy who you really have to respect because he really knows the game and he knows the fundamentals, but he grates on people after a while. And he's still in his honeymoon period right now with the Hawks. And or maybe he's just found a team that welcomes his tough love. I don't know. But that gets back to what he has done for Trae Young and what Trae Young has done for him. I think that is a great synergy. Something has happened there. And Trae Young is really playing well. But I will tell you that I think Collins played out of his mind. I think that Bogdanovich played out of his mind. I think they defended really well.
And I think Trey stirs that drink, man.
Yes, he does. But then do you blame him when they just about crushed him to death on pressure, you know?
That was interesting. That's where it all – it's like – I mean, it was the fourth quarter. They started.
And what I would say is, duh. I mean – I'm a Doc Rivers guy. First of all, I don't think they were ready to play today. I think that the problem with Embiid is that he loves to fall in love with shots where he doesn't have to pound anybody or get inside. I think that happened way too frequently in the first half.
You're harder on him than I expected.
Oh, I think that, well, first of all, if I still am of the belief, I walked into the playoffs this way, if it wasn't going to be the Lakers, I said, if everybody is healthy and on their game, the Sixers are the team that should win. And I still think that. I don't know about Embiid's health, and I don't know about his discipline. What you feel about Donovan Mitchell, I feel about Embiid in terms of he just falls in love with, you know, hitting threes, those above-the-break threes, or those – crab dribble, turnaround, 15 footers.
Does he?
Yeah, he does. Watch him. Go look at his shot chart. He does almost never. If you're talking about the restricted area, the percentage.
Because he's getting fouled down there all the time.
Exactly.
So it doesn't show up on the thing.
Well, no.
On the shot chart.
All right. Well, he didn't get to the line all that much today.
Well, he did all season, though. I got no
exactly.
concerns about Embiid.
Exactly. Okay. He is disciplined and not
all right.
kicking around from the three-point line or 16 feet. That wasn't happening.
I think they got nothing for him, man. I think they got nothing for Embiid in this series. I think Capella can't guard him, and I think Okongwu, that's a wrap. Like, don't
totally agree.
Him.
Totally agree on both. So why wasn't he setting up right there? From the
probably to your first point, which is they didn't know if they were going to have them. They weren't prepared. They weren't ready for whatever reason. I think like if they're good coaches there, you know, they got Cassell, they got Jaeger, they got Doc there. I think there's
pretty easy buttons to push that adjust things, you know, back to normal. One
it
game,
has to happen then, because Atlanta is feeling really good about itself.
Well, and they, can we they, just they put Ben Simmons on Trae Young? Can we just do that?
That was going to be my next point.
I mean,
why couldn't you do that from the, exactly?
Like, so why was the pecking order of
decision
Trae
number
Gardner.
Two? Decision yeah. number two, dumb play. And also, is there any roster in the NBA? And the answer is no. Is there any roster in the NBA better equipped to run traps, either 94 feet or half court traps? I mean, you got like six guys who live to trap the ball.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, lo and behold, you threw him on there. Poor Kevin Huerter, you know. I mean, that dude.
A nice pass at the end.
That, I'll tell you, Atlanta people, diehard Atlanta Hawks fans will be talking about that pass for a long time. It was a beautiful pass. And Bogdanovich, man, I love that dude now.
Yeah,
he had some attitude. You know, they won that game. You know,
all credit to him. I'm just saying, it's like, I don't think anybody would disagree with it. It's all rectifiable for, you know, for the Sixers here. And I think what we learned is, or what I learned is that Atlanta's like in this. Like, this isn't
right.
This isn't going to be like Philly in five, which I probably. You know,
it still could be. I think this could be very analogous to Memphis, Utah, the last series.
Sure.
You know, where Memphis came in and they were feeling it. They'd just gotten through, you know, winning the play-in. And
yeah,
and,
actually, that kind of lines up, right? They got the momentum of the round before.
And then Utah said, "Oh, okay." They're a pretty good team.
I think what I'm concerned about, if I'm a Hawks fan, is Capella didn't have anything for Embiid.
And never will.
But if Embiid's straight, like,
I think Embiid is too intelligent for his own good in terms of, I think he can get in his head. I think that if the Hawks begin to do a lot of backdoors, a lot of alley-oops with either Collins or Capella, which obviously they're really good at,
Embiid did a bad job at that today, reading
and the drop versus the contest. That's not his forte.
I think it's kind of his forte.
I think
good Embiid, that's good Embiid. It's the same thing as Gobert, you know.
I think that his forte is strong side more than weak side blocks.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I think that if you go weak side baseline, you know, again, if you've got him engaged with somebody else on the strong side, I don't think he reacts to weak side as well. Part of it is his size. I mean, you know, the difference between him and Gobert is like 40 pounds, you know.
Right.
Gobert's and you got to move that 40 pounds, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing about this series that I think is problematical is, can he remain healthy? I mean, when does he break down?
He break down? Not when.
Oh, no, I think when. He's not 100% right now.
And looked... still was pretty productive.
And got like 30 and 12 or whatever. Right. Yeah. No, I get it. But I don't know. I mean, I put it this way. That was a great game today. And this is going to be a fun series forever long at last. I enjoyed the first three games of Memphis-Utah because, you know, Memphis was frisky. Atlanta's frisky, you know. And
is Hunter coming back?
I hope so, because he was missed.
It was just knee soreness. They
said knee pain.
Pain. I don't know. That was the early game today.
He is really good. I mean,
Solomon Hill too. Solomon Hill's a solid little vet. He's a solid vet. He is solid, man.
Talk about a polarizing player. Solomon Hill, more people I respect like Solomon Hill than I ever care to want. I don't understand why people like him. He's always bitching about obvious fouls he's just committed.
But he's doing the smart stuff.
Exactly. And then I'm saying, look, why are you complaining? You're on the court because you know when to foul people, you dummy. And he's got to hit his threes, which he did in the first half and didn't in the second half. And they have better options. Now, I'll tell you who's
Well, they went with Huerter over him to close.
As they should, man. Huerter's playing great. And Herter was the starter until Bogdanovich came back.
Yep.
He started.
They've had a weird
Solomon year. Hill because of Hunter. And the upgrade from Hill to Hunter is significant, I think.
Hunter, yeah.
Hunter well, from Solomon Hill going back to the bench and putting yeah. in Herter. I mean, putting in, Hunter. I mean, Herter. I mean, not, yeah, Hunter. Hunter. Hunter, Herter, Hill. Yeah, here we go.
Right, right. No, I'm with you. That is a, I mean, it's kind of a analogous to the whole, like, the Bucks not having DiVincenzo or the Nets not having Green. Jeff Green, but maybe even more so because
I agree.
A real,
I agree, and also
but that same sort of role player guy who can be impactful.
The best kind of guys to have are the guys you disregard, even your own teammates disregard you, and then you do things right. that are like Luke Kennard today. You know, there are guys like that. The Clippers, by the way, have a few of them because everybody is disregarded besides, you know,
the top two.
Besides the top two, but. I think the Hawks have a couple like that too, and that's cool. And I think that's Nate McMillan some too. I think he really he's put together a rotation. Now it's easy when Bogdanovich comes back, and you compare the pick and roll of Trey and the bigs with Bogdanovich's shooting, everything falls into place. I get that. Mm-hmm. And when Capella doesn't have to guard Joel Embiid, then you've got some really cool interior defense at the other end. I think one of the keys to the series will be whether or not Embiid gets his hands dirty on a consistent basis. If he does, I don't see how they beat him. I don't see how you can beat the Sixers. And a healthy Embiid. Embiid remaining healthy and getting dirty. And this could be similar to the thing you were talking about with LeBron last time we were on. When you're iffy, you don't necessarily want to muck it up. And right. And maybe, you know, his legs are such that he doesn't want to muck it up.
Even just that can be just subconscious too.
Yeah. So, but I think
so
that's
what, so. What's your pick? Who you got?
I have the Sixers in six, but it won't shock me if it's five.
Hmm. After bagging on them the whole time, you did the reverse jinx
because they. I love that team when they're on their game, and they weren't on their game at all. They weren't ready to play today.
You and I are both really big Ben Simmons people.
Yeah.
And
oh yeah, that's the oh yeah, the wild card. Forgot about that. If Ben Simmons continues to be able to be hacked throughout mm-hmm. crunch time, then it might get interesting. That had I've forgotten about that. Yeah. Well, maybe put me down for six. Yeah, Ben Simmons may special, lose at least one game at the line.
When he's special, as he was in the third quarter today. Like, I
he
know,
was special everywhere but the line today, practically.
I've said this before, and I know it's not actually true because centers are the most important most impactful defensive position in the league. So the best defender in the league is always a center. That's just the nature of the league. So this isn't true, but I think Ben Simmons is the best defender in the league. That isn't a center, you know, mm-hmm. He's the only wing player in the league who is as impactful as those elite Gobert's
right
player. And I should put Draymond in there too. Draymond.
Yeah, I agree.
This year, but he whatever. So call him Draymond. Like he is,
he's Draymond in a lot of ways, like offensively challenged too, in his own way, except if he goes downhill, man, I mean, he did this during the regular season too, but he's just too fast for people when you're 6'10" and that fast.
And can finish with both hands around the rim.
Who is going to get in his way? That's the thing.
That's what I think is if this does end up being five like that, it just ends up being a squishing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like we're just Philly is like, we're bigger and we're more physical than you are.
Or, I mean, a squishing, or you might even say a suffocation, because sure. I think that's what they can do on defense. They can squish you on offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Embiid, I've seen more people get killed, quote unquote, fouling Embiid this year than just about anybody. You know, I mean, you do not want to, quote unquote, foul Joe Embiid by getting your neck in the way of his shoulder, you know?
Exactly. Well, I think...
I mean, I'm encouraged by that game today, which makes me feel like all four of these series have the potential to be
it's
really
all fun. It all could be fun, even if it's five games. And put it this way, I would love it if I can be wrong about one thing. I would love to see a frisky seven-game Hawks-Sixers series, not knowing who's going to win game seven. I would love it. It would pretty much guarantee that the Nets would go to the championship, but it would still be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I would say if there's one thing I could be wrong about, I might say the same thing, but the Bucks went in the same thing in seven on the other side of the bracket there.
The Bucks, you got to wait and see if they can hit their threes. If they can hit their threes and they still lose, I'm on board with you.
There's never been a playoffs where I've been more like up in the air of what the pecking order of the best teams are in the league. I mean, I'm on Brooklyn, but of the eight teams left, it's...
Well, my team is gone. I mean, I'm happy. I mean, I wanted Phoenix to win that game, that series, probably more than any other outcome, which is weird because I usually like to root for my own smartness, you know, and say, all right, I told you they'd win. But in this particular case, I was really wanting Phoenix to win. Yeah. So...
Well, Brett, let's check back in next week. We'll do another one of these. I'm sure a lot of different things will have materialized. And
the last time, wasn't I just like pissing on the Clippers and stomping on Kawhi's leadership? I mean, we should bring up a couple of things like that. You know, it's amazing what will happen 10 days, you know, down the line.
No, prisoner of the moment, but hopefully in
right. It's always good to remember how stupid you were. You know.
Exactly. Well, he's Britt Robson. You can follow him on Twitter at Britt Robson. I'm Dane at Dane Moore NBA. I'm going to be back with Will DeBerg later this week. We're going to do a Leandro Balmaro film review of his EuroLeague game. So we're flipping back and forth here on the pod between NBA playoff stuff with Britt and then other guys coming on to do some Wolves stuff too. So thank you for sticking with the pod. And Britt and I will talk again soon, and then we'll hopefully see some people at Forgotten Star on June 22nd for the lottery.
It's called Forgotten Star, huh?
Forgotten Star. It's a cool place, man. It really
is.
It's
a great name.
It is. It's like an old steel mill or something. So it's got like these huge, like...
So it's like a warehouse vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, you know, like a brewery that's cleaned
up.
Can
you hear each other talk?
It's big. It's a really big place. I think it'll be Tuesday night. So we'll make it work. And you know, 27% chance that it's a fun night for Wolves fans. But we'll see. We'll talk more about that as the time comes. We talk about it on every one of these pods. So thanks again, Britt, and I'll talk to you later. Until Wednesday with Will, I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah.